Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do is we give Casey's a plug for coffee. And we also address the issues between rural and urban America. I could tell by the cup lid, Jay Truitt was going to plug that right away. Jay Truitt on the right. I'm in the center. Andrew Henderson on the left. Finally, we got the team back here together. And Jay is obviously trying to be Andrew today, sitting in his car wearing a ball cap and glasses.
I'm driving around England just to see who all's quarantined is not.
Well, actually, I was beginning to think.
Down, really, I think he's just like a couple of car lengths ahead of me right now.
Yeah.
You know how Meghan Markle's asphyxiated by Lady Diana? Do you not think there's something that you need to tell us all, Jay? Uh-huh. Because trying to look like me is... it's not easy to do. You need to shave your beard off first, and I never wear an orange hat. And anyway, I thought that Trent was going to say, let's get ready to rumble. It looks like the two of us are in for a fight here or a car race, something.
Maybe, yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, so yeah. In all seriousness, I'm back in the States. I had to make some I had to make some of those nasty meetings on the East Coast, and so I ended up coming back to visit my sweet mother. And spend a few days visiting my mother and father and old friends.
Fantastic.
Hey, thanks for your update on visiting friends, Jay. But I do have something really important.
There are.
A philosophical quote by the famous Yogi Berra. It ain't over till it's over. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Baseball is 90% mental and the other half is physical.
That's quite good, actually. That's very funny.
He was actually great, though, wasn't he?
Yeah,
so
he was.
You see, what happens there is that he ridicules me about bringing up Yogi Bear, the baseball player, and saying it was a nothing story. And then all of a sudden, it's now the main feature of Rural Route. It just shows you how he can change.
I never said it was a nothing story.
Yeah, whoa. You were like a rat up a drain pipe having a go at me there before. But anyway.
No one goes there nowadays. It's too crowded.
I'm sorry. I'm still imagining that rat.
Yeah. I bet you are. Anyway, so how did you escape from the riots in Puerto Rico then? Did you go by boat or by plane?
I left right before all that stuff had occurred. And sadly, I had to leave my wife behind because she was
So is she okay?
She's there. Yeah, she's there still.
Oh.
And she's going to join me here in a few days if there's enough fuel on the island to actually make a plane take off and land. because of the stupid riots and the whatever they're, you know.
Are they rioting for the same things as the Cubans? Is that what's happening, that there's really rich people who own big houses in Puerto Rico while everybody else starves? Is that what the problem is?
I think, I think this one is just about there's a fuel shortage because the truckers went on strike. Ooh. And I think socialism just generically just really frustrates people after they realize what it means, right? What it really does mean. And so I do think there's some things that they probably are justified in rioting for in regards to the way their government just oversees the management of the island. And it's just kind of sad, but because it is literally one of the most beautiful places on planet Earth. And they just squander so many resources. It really is sad. And there is some frustration that there are a number of people escaping high tax places in the United States and essentially fleeing to Puerto Rico as a tax haven. That's a truth. And it creates a whole lot of anxiety for them as well. Yeah.
So yeah. What I said wasn't far from the truth then, Jay.
No, it's it's kind of like one of those things where just a whole series of events came together at the same time. But there really are some deep-seated, long-running frustrations with the government on one side. The other side, they don't like being invaded by people from the mainland that are fleeing from high-tax areas. And then you throw in the middle of that a trucker strike, which basically halted fuel movements around the island, and it becomes a pretty near crisis pretty quick.
You know, what's at the root of the trucker strike?
It seems to be wages, really, but I mean. Seriously, the island is 100 miles wide and 36 miles tall. I was born in a county about that size, right? And right. So the idea of complaining about having to drive all the way around the county, you know, somewhere in the high plains is a little interesting. I guess I'm having a little trouble understanding it, but I wouldn't want to drive a truck in Puerto Rico. The roads are narrow and they're mostly over mountainous regions and probably really dangerous. So it could be well justified.
So why isn't there a food shortage if there's a fuel shortage?
There are some food shortages, but there's a good amount of food that's locally produced in Puerto Rico.
So like coffee?
Like coffee and about 38 other kinds of fruits and vegetables. Right. I mean, most of the fresh fruits and vegetables. You can survive just by walking down the street a little bit and stopping at a market.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can only live so long on fruits and vegetables and not a very high quality of life, I might add.
I said survive. I say thrive.
Yeah.
Right. You can't maintain a physique like I have just on fruits and vegetables. You've got to do some extras there.
Yeah.
That, right.
It is a good point, though, because what you're saying, Trent, is true that we're in the same boat as well. You know that we've got this. It's nothing to do with fuel prices here, by the way. It's to do with logistics and people on this pandemic issue. We can't get goods from one place to another because so many people are off work, and it's fueling unrest all over the world for one reason or another, isn't it? If you actually look at the
Andrew,
uprisings. Yeah.
And I need you to explain, even though you did it yesterday on Across the Pond, the Rural Route audience has not heard the pandemic issue. You need to explain that.
Well, we have an app, or I did have an app on my phone, which pings if I've come into contact with somebody that later falls prey to COVID-19, although the PCR test is only 9% accurate. So that's resulted in over 600,000 people self-isolating here in the UK. And when you think that only 10% of them are self-isolating for people that really did have COVID, therein lies the problem. And if you then think of what the economic cost of all this is, it's unthinkable. And so they're calling it the pingdemic. So what people are doing to avoid the pingdemic now is they're actually deleting the app off their phones.
Good.
Which is, yeah. And they're also the government's giving out lists of exempt people to the pingdemic. Now, I never thought I'd live through something like this. It's just unbelievable that people are falling for this in any way, shape or form. It's just frightening. And it's causing a real problem. And that's why there's unrest. But the unrest is not being reported by the media in the UK, Paris, Italy, Greece, Germany. It's happening everywhere. And they've all got similar issues of the governments trying to make them do things.
Is there a COVID component to what's happening in Puerto Rico, Jay? Jay Truitt?
Jay, can you hear us?
Apparently Jay is checked out.
I think Jay's...
I think he's locked up.
He has.
I think he might... Nevada, Missouri...
He's locked up. It's normally me.
Not,
see, that is...
Yeah,
it's people on the right-hand side. It's always the person on the right-hand side that it happens to. Have you not noticed that?
No.
I think that...
No, I
look at me, I'm fine now.
I heard a word from Jay there. Go ahead, Jay.
What did you say, Jay?
No, that is the problem. Put us on the right and you try to silence us. I see how this works now.
Yeah. I don't put anybody anywhere. But I am going to take a break.
There could well be something in that. There could well be something in that, you know.
We need to talk about certified Piedmontese and the opportunity to be a part of adding value and capturing the value. Now, at some level, we need to talk about access to food, but the Great Plains Beef Company, i.e. Lone Creek Kettle Company, really focuses on what's happening in the Great Plains of America and working at a program designed for Great Plains producers. And what that is the Piedmontese sires from Lone Creek Kettle Company generating a consistently tender supply of beef that the consumer is willing to pay for. And then you, the cattleman, need to get rewarded and get closer to the consumer. Certified Piedmontese. Get a hold of Marlon Will for full details. We'll be back with more Rural Route after this. Welcome back to Herding Cats 101. Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, cat number one. He's in Missouri. Cat number two's in, I don't know, somewhere in England. Probably the Burton.
Old Dolby. Old Dolby.
Yeah. Old Dolby.
I'm sure there's an Old Dolby somewhere in some state in America, but I'm in the real Old Dolby.
No, but the true cattle feeding area of Australia is in Dolby, Queensland, Australia. And I've been there. And you know why that was so named.
Yeah, after Old Dolby. Okay.
Yep. Okay, Jay, you're trying to get in a word edgewise. Go for it.
No, well, first of all, Andrew, but we would call it new old Dolby. So...
that is very funny. I hope somebody picked that. That is good. Well played. You've dressed like me and you've outdid me there. Well done. Carry on.
No, sorry. Sorry.
Time out. Who has the horse outside their window? Jay, was that you or Andrew?
That was me.
Could have been me. I'm at the sale barn, so it's possible that about anything. I think this might be specialty animal week or something after the fair is over. So get dumping off.
All right. Well, I heard a horse whinny. I just want to know where it was coming from. All right, Jay, go.
I think it's from here, right over here beside me. No, but this concept of I do think that a big part of what's actually going on is the whole frustration component. And I know in you all's earlier conversations, you had a disagreement kind of about whether we still have time to go from the bottom up and we still have time to do this, that, and the other. I think it is in the United States, which is maybe a little bit different than other places in the world. Our system is supposed to be self-repairing, not automatically, but it is supposed to, and it's always intended to be kind of a forward-moving system. And if you look at the number of state laws that have already been signed, put in place, and are moving forward, whether it be Arizona, Georgia, even in Michigan and Pennsylvania, et cetera, there are a lot of shifts that are taking place in the country that are designed to bring back some confidence in the system and not just leave people feeling, for lack of a better term, people just are pissed off. And I think it's kind of across the political spectrum at this point. There's a bunch of people that are mad on the far left because we don't want to do an infrastructure plan that is fully financed by debt in the United States. And they're trying to just ignore everything that has happened and move on. And folks on the right-hand side of the spectrum realize that I think a lot of people realize we have to fix stuff now at the state level, or really it doesn't matter because we won't have an opportunity to participate in the future. But I actually kind of feel a little bit optimistic about it, even though I did order my hat yesterday that says we the people are pissed. And so.
By the way, you've been wearing that hat for years, though. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. No. But I mean, if you look at if everyone would like just you know, kind of pay attention to what's actually happening in Washington, D.C. versus what the media seems to be covering and hyping about, you know, and this, that, and the other, and Schumer's dramatic speech about spending all weekend. The infrastructure bill, the Democrat Party is going to allow the infrastructure bill to essentially die and not do any of it because, and rightfully so, right? They're in the majority, so they get to decide this. But because they can't get the $3.5 trillion worth of social spending to come along with that, that becomes like another perpetual income income tool for a bunch of people in the United States. They're just going to let it die, right? So we're back to this. We're back to this concept that we're either going to become more powerful and controllable, or we're not going to repair the things that we already have.
Well, I'm just going to point blank say it. If you think that throwing more money at any project is the answer, you are part of the problem. I don't care who you are. More money is not the answer.
But he's just saying they're not going to throw any money.
That's good.
Yeah. No, but so let's hang on, right? There's a difference between spending and investment. And it's possible to make an investment in things that actually generate income and revenue, both for the economy and for the federal government. It's possible to do that. And we have done that in the past, sometimes quite successfully.
Yep.
But that's not really what we're talking about here. I mean, we seriously have a live conversation going on inside the hallways in Washington, D.C. about whether or not we ought to give a tax credit for e-bikes. I just drove 12 miles to get a cell signal. We're literally having a conversation about whether or not we would offer a tax credit for an electric bicycle.
Oh, yeah. E-bike.
Not motorcycle. Electric bicycle that's an 80 to 90% chance it was built in China in the first place to come into the United States. And we can't do that because they want more bike lanes. Seriously? I mean, I do understand that in some places in urban America, a bike lane is kind of a cool and practical thing. It is not anywhere in the world where you're in rural areas. It just is not.
It's not practical in London where they've done it, and it's an absolute shambles.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, right? And so we've lost the ability to kind of look at it. That's my idea. So now we're doing spending to make somebody, some special interest, some little segment of our voting block feel better about what's going on in the world. That's not an investment. If we wanted to invest as a nation in more nuclear power or build better infrastructure, true blue infrastructure, maybe modernize our electrical grid, we can have a pretty short conversation about that, and that might be worthy spending for long-term debt financing.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. So can I just paraphrase what you've said? Are you saying that this massive infrastructure bill that the Democrats are talking about is not going to happen? Is that what you're saying?
I think no.
Okay. That's good.
I actually think killing it themselves so that they have something to run on in the next election, because for sure they don't have anything to run on now.
Well, I want to ask you a question. What do you think? You know, your PCR test is being replaced because it's not accurate. Yeah. That's now come out from the CDC, but it won't be there. It won't be available until December the 31st, which means you're going to use the old test. And what's going to happen is they've proven now the reason you're getting rid of the test is it actually shows people with influenza, with pneumonia and the common cold as having COVID. What do you think the real cost of that is? Because for me, that is billions. Because what you're saying is that, you know, how many people get a common cold? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, you know.
Andrew, again, you're missing the point. The COVID virus is the common cold.
No, I'm not missing
it. It is.
I'm sorry, I'm not.
The reason the PCR test picks it up is because I believe that's how they built this virus. They started with the common cold and then put it on steroids. And that's all that
Okay. It's the common cold on steroids, which is not the common cold. So what I'm going to say to you is this, that you're not listening to what I'm saying there, Trent. I'm saying, have you contemplated what the cost of this is?
Because that's
the real issue, that we're paying people's wages, we're paying people to stay at home. It's just unrelenting cost. And it doesn't matter what infrastructure bill you come out with, this is costing billions and billions and billions. And I wonder, at what point do the banks say this is not sustainable? And when you look at the whole world, you know.
Jay, 1 minute.
No, I think so there's a piece of me that thinks that that some people wanted to do this spending intentionally, literally to break the economies and prove that the government's needed more control yet. The other side of me says literally is that we've kind of trained ourselves over the last 30 or 40 years to ignore reality. And now that chicken is coming home to roost. And we did something super stupid over the last 18 months worldwide. That will haunt us and our future generations for a long time. That or somebody's just going to pull the rug out, do a clean sweep, and we break all those financiers.
As a person who just spent 70 days on the road in 33 states looking at what's happening in the businesses across this country, they are shutting down left and right and ones that you would not think would be susceptible. But when people no longer have a work ethic, they're not going to show up to work and the small business is going to fail. That is where we are at. We're also at the halftime of Rural Route. We'll take a break. We'll come back to Sale Barn Meets Horse Farm after this. Welcome back, Rural Route, Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, giving a little plug to the Nevada, Missouri Sale Barn today. Andrew Henderson just plugging away like a plug horse. Jay, give me an example. Now, the energy infrastructure from the electric grid needs to be fixed. There's no doubt about that. I'm beyond thinking that the federal government or the state government should fix that. Let's turn it over to private entity and we will have a secure energy supply.
I agree.
Me too.
I do agree. The problem that we find ourselves in is that in some places in America, that would be pretty easy to do, right? There's some states that still have essentially a capitalist driven electrical but that's not everywhere, and most of them are code dependent on state laws that authorize them to even exist or not exist. I don't know how long that would take,
but codependent devolution has to be the way forward there, doesn't it? That you get states to work with each other. Absolutely. So that between them, they're all self.
That problem, understand the scope of it. You just fix a problem in Nebraska or Wyoming.
Okay. Andrew, go.
No, I'm saying that codependent devolution is always going to be the way forward. That's the sort of thing that's coming out of this crisis that we all realize, that what you don't want is a Keystone pipeline to shut down, because as soon as any pressure is put on somewhere like Texas, then the whole thing grinds to a halt. The same thing happened in northern Germany. So codependent devolution of power to make sure that everybody is absolutely 100% relying on their own grid system, that has to be the way forward. It's also, from an environmental point of view, the way forward as well. And I think that's the thing that, you know, if we start fighting these globalists, the one thing they can't do is argue that bringing something from one part of the world to another is the right thing to do. So it wins on all. I mean, you have to be in control of your, well, you have to be in control of three things: your fuel, your food, and your borders. Those are the three things you have to be in control of, because if you're not, you are susceptible to what I believe is happening now.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I want to just come back to where we were, because I didn't fully understand, excuse me, how the electric grid in the Great Plains worked until we hit rock bottom. And we hit rock bottom the third week of February in 2021. And that is the week that Texas had a problem, and everybody blamed the weather. But everybody also told Texas that if you are reliant upon wind and solar for more than 30% of your electricity needs, you're going to have a problem. And they're at 34%. Everybody told the people who understood the electrical grid told them you can't do that. And yet we continued to do that. Now, at the other part of that, Andrew, is the fact that we are all co-ops. And co-ops mean that I own a part of it. But the co-ops have been hijacked by those same global elites that you're talking about. I can document in the state of Nebraska, Nebraska Public Power is now controlled by a guy named George Soros. So they found a way to hijack all of the things that we absolutely need that you just named: food, energy, you left out water, and control of the borders.
Well, I meant food and water is the same thing. But when you look at, you just mentioned George Soros. George Soros and Bill Gates just bought the UK PCR test outright, because they know that our government isn't going to ban that PCR test yet, because they want to make the numbers look terrible in the autumn and not show people that it's actually the flu and the cold. And all these things, the globalists have got their claws on it. And what I'm trying to say is that even in Arizona, I don't know whether you know where the audits are going on, where the locals have taken action, it looks as though they're having it taken away from them by the state and the federal government now. And that's why I look at they've got so much power now that it has to come from both ways. Because looking at what you've just described and what I've just told you, you know that even with locals having the power, they haven't got the financial resources to compete against these people. And these people are evil. Mm-hmm. That's all you can say. They're evil.
No doubt about it.
And the thing about this is that we've got to – and, you know, you say to me, well, the difficulty I've got is that 90% of my fellow countrymen have taken the jab. They now don't want to read anything bad. They don't want to know anything bad. They just want to believe the government was right because they took the decision to take the jab. And that's a real problem for people like me, because they don't want to know that they might have made the wrong decision.
Jay, what do you think? Are you back, Jay, or what are you doing?
He's not back.
Well, I think Jay had a very good plan and intent to come and join us today, but he just isn't all there. But he looks good drinking his coffee, though.
He doesn't. He can hear us, and that's very frustrating. When I'm on the right hand side, I know that I can hear what you're saying. And I want to say something there. He might start having a go at my orange cap, and I can't even have a go back at him. That's what he'll be saying.
I want to just paraphrase Jerry Rowe's comments earlier. As a person who spent a lifetime in the electric business and the power grid business, he basically echoed my sentiments about getting the federal government out of the power grid business. And if we don't do that, we're in trouble. You know what I struggle with, Andrew? Every time we go down a path, we come back to Bill Gates, George Soros. How do we have two people that are so intertwined in every facet of our life? How do we get to that point? That should be the real question that we ask.
Well, I think it is. And I think that's why, you know, all roads lead to Rome, as they say. And I can see. We've got Tony Blair. Tony Blair, who's completely part of this, the Tony Blair Institute is funded by George Soros. He's saying the other day that people who are non-vaccinated the world over should have their freedoms taken away from them. He's actually saying that. And I find this extraordinary that people allow him on TV to actually say it. That's the first thing. And at the end of the day, you know, we've got George Soros, who managed to survive the Holocaust as a so-called Jewish person. And then we've also got Bill Gates, who, you know, let's face it, look at the person. I saw the Senate committee yesterday describing, I don't know whether you saw this, but describing the concerns they have about that woman that we described last week that's now in charge of agriculture in the US, right? Mm. And I don't know whether you saw this, but it was unbelievable. She actually has been known to want to front a campaign, seriously, Trent, to show what the real problems are in American society. And do you know what the centerpiece of her campaign was?
No.
A little girl. And she said, yes, this is the problem. We don't want to be having any more children.
Mm-hmm.
That is the person. Totally. No, you don't need to believe it. They put up the actual poster that she put up.
I need to believe it.
Well, she did it. And this came out yesterday. And I watched that and I thought, holy smoly. There is somebody in a very powerful position in government who's actually trying to depopulate the world.
So everybody wants to belittle this and say, it's not the same. But I've experienced this for 20 years. Back 20 years ago, Andrew, I would go to animal rights conventions and I'd meet people, you know, by the dozens. There would be 500 there, whatever the case may be. And I would literally just try to sit down and have a conversation with them. And they were willing to do whatever it takes to liberate these animals, because these animals are living in tyranny. And they use the same sentiments that we talk about here with the human population. And then all you have to do is ask them about, well, what do you think about abortion? And then they would categorically explain why killing a baby is okay while they're here. This thought process has been taking place and unfolding for quite some time, putting the value of everything above the value of human life. And now we've got enough of those people in power that we're living through that living hell.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, because I think it's so deep. Deeply entrenched in what's happening at the moment. It is absolutely frightening, because you look at, you know, how many, if we didn't use the cows and the sheep and the pigs, mm-hmm. the cows and the sheep, particularly beef, to graze land that we can't cultivate, what do you think would happen to those animals? Do you think people would keep them as pets?
No, they would perish. They'd be gone.
Exactly, exactly. So what are these people on? They would see millions of species of cultivated genetics disappear through the brilliant custodianship and stewardship of farmers. This is unbelievably stupid. And, you know, it's like when people used to say to me that farmers, you know, why do they hunt? And I'm saying, but they hunt to keep the rich strength of the individual species. If you don't cull the unhealthy and the old out, then you end up with a species that loses its vigor. And that's obvious, you know?
That's not totally true.
Okay. All right.
Because the hunter doesn't
go out.
I'm wrong
about a lot of things.
Well, the hunter doesn't go out and seek the weak and the unhealthy animals. But by controlling the population, and so that there's not an overpopulation and a number of animals are in an ecosystem, you prevent unhealthy animals. So your sentiment is right. It's just hunters don't go shoot the weak ones.
Okay. Well, I know that they do that with stag hunting in this country, because they try to make sure that we don't get old stags who could then, you know, suffer agony in old age. They, you know, they keep them, they don't like to see them have ill health. But anyway, I'm just saying.
But at the end of the day, the end result is the same. It's about keeping the population in check. But you'd be hard-pressed to go into somebody's house and look at a mounted buck and say, he was about to die a natural death, so I wanted to take him out.
No, I get that. No, I'm not disputing that either. You're right about that. You are right about what you're saying.
Lone Creek Cattle Company providing the opportunity for cattlemen. And I'm telling you, if you've not followed up on this, you need to do this. Contact Marlon Will and say, what is Trent talking about? Is he really talking about a $180 per head premium over a 600-pound calf price? That's what I'm talking about. And Marlon Will has full details. It's this simple. Take the Piedmontese sires, use them on your cows via AI, via natural service, doesn't matter. Verify those calves have the myostatin gene, and boom, you're in the money. LoneCreekCattleCo.com. Back to the last segment. We'll see if we can find Jay after this. Welcome back. Rural Route. Andrew claiming he's got a good one. Fogarty. What the Fogarty? I now have a hyperbaric chamber in my house. Thank you, Dr. Ted Fogarty. We'll talk about that later.
I have a good one.
Now, what did you want to bring up, Andrew?
Oh, brilliant. Well, the extra money that you make from using the myostatin gene in your Piedmontese cattle, and you just eloquently said that that could be worth how many $100,
$180 per head, $180 per head over market price.
Okay. Now, I'm asking a serious question now. When do you think that those increases will be swallowed up by the increases in the cost of living that you guys are seeing in America right at this moment? You know?
They've already been swallowed up by the increases of cost of production. The question right. you need to ask, and the one that I have to think about, and obviously I have not had this conversation with the folks behind Lone Creek Cattle Company, but they have to be thinking about it as well, is that, you know, when food becomes a shortage issue, will people still pay a premium for a known quality product, which is exactly what the certified Piedmontese is? It's the most tender beef you can find. But if the consumer's not willing to pay a premium for that, the whole system is vulnerable. But the truth of the matter is, if the food is in high or shortage, then all of the systems are subject to being eroded.
They are. I asked the question not as a, it wasn't a trick question. It was because I wanted to know how long you think before that particular element of what's happening in the economy is going to hit you. We're not seeing yet the food price increases. But what I was told the other day, I think I told you about the price of steel. We know what's happening with the price of animal feed because that's one of my businesses. And I know that that is increasing exponentially. I'm just trying to think, when do you think the people in the cities are going to realize exactly what this administration that they've elected or not elected, as the case may be, is actually up to? Because people aren't going to be able to afford the everyday things that they eat and drink, are they?
No, correct. To answer your question, they are not going to take notice until they don't have access.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, that was the question because I just wanted to know.
I hear Jay Truitt.
So you could hear me finally. I do think that just the generic inflation across the board may pause a lot of the progress that we made in trying to do segregation of the food system based on quality and other factors. But we're setting ourselves up for really serious inflation in a number of sectors in the United States right now. And it becomes like a set of dominoes that you can't stop. Once you hit certain ones, you can't really back up. And we for sure are there, it seems to me.
Why do you think that the stock market hasn't responded to that yet, Jay? What's your thoughts on that? Because it's still at an all-time high, and I don't understand that.
I think we have clearly detached ourselves from reality and market maybe about 12 months ago, completely from reality. We're completely away from it. Before, it was maybe a 50% bet, but when you listen to these internal analysts inside companies, they're still saying it's a hold at 35.
I think he's saying, I think he's saying that
sent out.
I think he's trying to explain they're playing Russian roulette.
I don't pretend to understand Wall Street and those markets. I try to pay attention and fundamentally understand the agricultural markets.
Yep.
Jay did just say something that I wish we could expand upon, because we know that finally there's some awareness and exposure to the global food companies that have a complete foothold on global food production. And you and I talked about that. Even that was a topic of discussion when I was with you in March of 2020 before all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
We do have this growth in opportunity markets, and I think Jay called them segregation markets, where we segregate certain qualities. And in the leader, nobody can argue the fact, in the meat business, it was a certified Angus beef system that was the leader in making that happen.
Yeah.
What he just provoked in me is a thought that maybe we were getting to critical mass at the point where enough of these local and regional markets were putting a dent in what was going to be the future. And the global elites in the food business were losing control. You know, my favorite example is when you have one beer company that controls 28% of the global beer supply. That's near monopolistic. And I wonder how much of that could actually be a coincidence.
You come up with an absolutely brilliant theory there, because if you think about it, the pandemic put all the power back into the globalists, because they, you know, the Amazons, the supermarkets, they're the ones that took back control from all these local products and these local initiatives. I hope, and I think you might be right here, that the locals have sussed that and are going to say, right, well, as soon as we can, as soon as they can stop controlling us like they think they can control us, we're going to tell them to stick their supermarkets and their Amazons where the sun don't shine. And I hope that the people do that. I really do.
Your best case in point is the guy who we bring to the forefront as often as possible, because he's a perfect living example of what you can do, and that's Ray Brown. Farmer Ray Brown is selling direct right off of the farm, and at some point that's going to hurt those little conglomerates that have a control on the food supply.
But there, you know, he's had his – until he got his own footing – they were trying to put him out of business. There's another one locally at the moment that's just started up as well, that's doing really, really well. And they don't like it, because people like something local and fresh, because it does tick those the real environmental boxes. You know, that you don't have a plastic container, you have a bottle you can keep refilling. Those are real things. Those are not the lies that the supermarkets tell you. You know, when they tell you that they recycle everything. If you do something locally, everything's there. It's visual. You know that it's more efficient. You know that it's fresher, and you know that you're supporting your local businesses. And I think the supermarkets need to have the spotlight turned on them and say, well, where are you buying all these foods, and on what basis? Why would you have a sustainable program in the UK but buy off Thailand or the Philippines or wherever, China or wherever? What controls have you got over that supply? And once people start to really shine that light, you'll find that it's all about price. And that's where I think you know, we need to see what the end game of all this is, to then understand where we can take it. Because at the moment, I mean, you know, I said to you before, we're already seeing, I don't know whether you saw, there's some very interesting data coming out of Israel. In Israel at the moment, I think it's 62% vaccinated, but 84% of the cases in hospital are vaccinated. And they're dying, Trent. Only a small proportion, but they're dying. If that starts to really show that this vaccination is something other than a vaccination, this is where this is going to end up, I just don't know. It frightens me, to be honest.
Jay, are you back?
I am. Yeah, I got to a new place here.
Okay.
So
he's at the strawberry market now.
Yeah. So I want you to speak to this if you can. We have 3 minutes left in this segment. The timing of the bottleneck, the timing of all of these infrastructure challenges, seem to be coinciding with how regional and what you called segmented quality products seem to really be taking a foothold. Is that just the globalists trying to shut them all down?
You know, I think so. One of the points Andrew made, which really is key, and I guess I'm looking at this from a completely different angle, and that angle is that we've enjoyed for about 10 years, fairly, with some exceptions, right? for about 10 years in the country, we enjoyed almost no food inflation as consumers.
Yes.
Now, that's negative from a producer standpoint, but consumers really didn't experience food inflation in the United States and in Canada, you know, North America generically, because ours.
The world over, I'd suggest.
Like
but
not. And, yeah. Right, to a certain degree, but you literally cannot separate Canada and the United States when it comes to the food distribution system. People want to, but it's just almost impossible to do. With that said, though, I think we are in kind of a little bit of a game changer environment where we're seeing a shift. And my big question is to watch as inflation begins to really impact some food prices. Do all the things that people said mattered still matter? And mm-hmm. I think Andrew's point is will turn out to be correct, that in the end, price is king, price is king, and price is king. And as long as they think that food is safe and doesn't have any kind of harmful effect on their body, we're going to see inflation will stop some of the segmentation aspects and probably will drive us back towards commodity products for a period of time. That's not what people want to hear, but I just really don't see any other way that it occurs. And it probably is a good thing in some respects that it lets us kind of retrench and start over. You are correct, though, Trent, that obviously people that want to have a single world food system, right? And that's kind of a different discussion, but people that want to see this thing all controlled by single producers and providers. Yeah, I mean, they hate this segmentation unless they own it, and then they love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've tried to acquire as many of them as possible. You know, one other closing comment that just dawned on me. The same people who've always been critical of us utilizing hormone technology, i.e. estrogen in beef supplies to make it more efficient, they're afraid of that. By the way, those hormones are basically just at the simple level proteins. They're the first ones to put a spike protein in their arm and feel like they're protected. Ugh. What a bunch of hypocrites. Mm. And we're out of time. Right. That's the last word. I didn't mean to be the last word, Andrew, just the way it happened. We've journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. All three of us remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route. I would encourage you to go to loosetails.blogspot.com. I'm going to get really good at getting these emails out on a daily basis with all of the programs that I bring on a daily basis. It's about 5 in total. Go subscribe, loosetails.blogspot.com. It's free. Remember, you get what you pay for.